Wow, Lakers Warriors just around the corner. Isn't that going to be great? LeBron against Steph Curry, a throwback in the playoffs, Western Conference semifinals. Heaps to talk about in the NBA, including Dylan Brooks is out of a job. Let's get into it. It's 3rd and 5. Well, we are at the pointy end of the NBA season, which is always a ton of fun. A handful of teams left. We're going to get right into the NBA on this episode, but before that, I welcome in James Thwaites, Dave Rice, and myself. I welcome in myself, Simon Hampton, into episode 71 of 3rd and 5. Gents, great to be talking to you again. It feels like we've, I just saw you yesterday, and in fact, it was Friday, and here we are, Tuesday night, recording this. So it is a slightly smaller gap between podcasts, which is nice.
It is. You know, obviously the NFL draft is now in the rear view mirror. Speaking of rear view,
did you watch day three? Did you watch who was Mr. What do they call the last pick of the draft?
Mr. Irrelevant.
Who was it this year?
Can't remember the guy's name. I think he was a defensive tackle. Offensive tackle. Yeah, I'm now doubting myself. But yeah. I know he went to the Rams.
Did you see a kicker got taken pretty high? Yeah, the 49ers take a third round kicker. Yeah, I like that.
They did. Apparently Shanahan was like, I got lots of texts from everyone giving me shit about the pick. And he just started laughing. He was like, to be fair, I would have texted other kick coaches as well, giving them shit about taking a kicker in the third round.
Wait till that kicker turns up in January and knocks the Seahawks out in the first round.
That actually that was Evan McPherson, the Bengals kicker.
Yeah.
And as a rookie, it was a key part of that playoff run in January, slotting every kick, and they were clutch kicks, and he was picked maybe 5th round, and before then it was very rare to even go in the draft. So it's probably sort of started, people are thinking about it. You do need to have a clutch kicker. Like when you're actually watching games that are close, and especially with bad weather and whatever, kickers are essential. And so having some weight towards that seems reasonable.
Do you think that pick gets made then if McPherson doesn't have the success he's had in the third round?
Probably not the third round, but yeah.
I feel like that's got to have some influence in it, right? Like,
also when you look at San Francisco, maybe not so much last year where they were putting up lots of points, but the year before when they were in the playoffs, all those games were so tight. Like when they knocked out Green Bay and like all those other teams, they were like real low scoring games. So they're probably pretty dependent on a kicker, especially when you've got like depth at RB like they do with McCaffrey and a couple of the others there. So not a bad move. Kind of rate it.
Did we talk last week about how the Yankees payroll, their injured list payroll is bigger than, I think, their active payroll and also the payrolls of about half the other teams?
Yeah.
And yeah, also their payroll got $40 million. Yeah, payroll got $40 million richer the other day with Aaron Judge going on the injured list. And man, the Yankees are a tough watch at the moment.
Yeah, not a lot of fun. I did see, though, on the other side of town, the Mets, they're getting one of their off-season signings, their pitchers.
Verlander.
Verlander's coming back. I saw him doing...
Mr. Kate Upton.
Mr. Kate Upton. It'll be interesting to see how he goes there. Looking forward to hopefully getting along to a Mets game soon and watching it. But
getting some Shake Shack.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm a halal
guy.
Just
right? Walk with your Shake Shack.
Yeah. I'm a halal guy now, though. So, big ups Yankee Stadium. But one of the most boring things over the weekend, I think, was the Formula One.
Boring
race.
So, I was listening. So, one of the problems with Formula One right now, I mean, Red Bull are so good. But also Red Bull, when they've got the DRS, are just so much faster than everyone else. And so, like, other teams need to catch up there. But, yeah, it was kind of disappointing. Like, it just wasn't much overtaking. Much exciting.
What's the Miami track like? Because it's pretty new, right? Has there been one F1 race there?
No one in Formula One will seemingly really say this, apart from maybe the drivers, because they're all trying to hype it up. But the chat is that it's not very good because it's basically in the car park of Hard Rock Stadium where the Dolphins play, and they've basically built a track there. So it goes around the outside of the Hard Rock Stadium. It's not a great track, I don't think. And it's the second race there. So It's always a bit of fun because there's always plenty of stars there. I remember last year, you know Martin Brundle, the F1 commentator that does the grid walk before the race? Yeah. He bumped into Paolo Banchero on the grid before the race and thought he was Patrick Mahomes. And so started interviewing him as Patrick Mahomes. So there'll be stars there, which will be fun. That it's always a fun race down there.
I love it. Yeah, they had massive flooding there a few weeks ago as well. Mm. So, it'd be interesting. But hopefully anything's better than it is. I think the highlight, though, of the F1 over the weekend, for me personally, was the rumour that Fernando Alonso is somehow linked to Taylor Swift. And the commentators picked up on this. And the amount of Taylor Swift song references in the chat was incredible. So hopefully that continues. Speaking of Taylor Swift, super, super quickly, though. Si, I think you've seen it through. Just for any of our New Zealand listeners, Taylor Swift tickets for her tour in New York, which isn't cheapest even ticket. In New York. It's in New Jersey. What was the cheapest ticket? $1,200?
More. So... she's got three shows in a row at MetLife Stadium, 80,000 seat stadium. So there's, 240,000 seats, I guess, or, allocation roughly because it changes for concerts. But cheapest ticket, $1,900 in the nosebleeds. $1,900 at the back of an 80,000 seat stadium. And there's three nights, and it's the same throughout each three night. And, and you look across Taylor Swift's tour of America at the moment, and it's pretty much the same in every city she's going to.
So I'm going to back up Tay-Tay. This is not Taylor Swift setting the prices. They sold them at normal prices, and scalpers just absolutely jumped in.
But the free market still determines it. So, like, it's pretty crazy that there's that many trust fund babies and or teenagers in New York or in the New York tri-state area to be able to charge that
for
much.
Sure. But it's fair to defend Taylor Swift there because she's not trying to, like, She's not
ripping people off. Offense.
Yeah, correct.
And I was like, so the surprise to you, Dave, is that there aren't a lot of there are too many millionaires in New York and New Jersey.
Isn't it like 300,000 millionaires in New York or more, possibly?
Yeah, it's something insane.
Like,
so it's a lot of their, so it's a lot of those the kids of those that are probably going or paying that secondhand price.
You got it. It's like when you watch
about 10% of the median rent in New York City at the moment.
Yeah, it's like when you watch the Knicks or the Nets playoff games and there's just these young kids, like squads of young kids sitting in the front row. These like $50,000 seats.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Anyway, won't be going to Taylor Swift at the end of the month, but...
I wish I was.
Yeah, you could have gone to Rangers, game six and still had about $1,500 left over. Far better way to spend your money. Okay, let's talk. We'll talk Rangers later. Let's talk NBA to start with. And let's start with the series that wrapped up. And we'll start with the most recent one, Sunday night, the Warriors against the Kings, game seven. Turned up, it was Steph Curry's night, basically. Goes out there, puts in a 50-point performance. Warriors look really comfortable. They win by 20 points. To me, that was just a team that was probably a little bit better than their opposition, but the opposition were very good. They just turned it up and knew how to win a big game. And they went out and got it done in game seven.
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird one because I think like the Kings in the West don't get to the spot that they were by not being a good team. I think what it comes down to for me is the leadership from Steph Curry. And just that seasoned Warriors team. The only reason they won that game seven, and I'm going to die on this hill, and I don't think this is a hot take. Steph Curry's obviously like epic 50-point performance to be the most points scored in a game seven ever. But also the Kevon Looney was just absolutely unstoppable. Sabonis just looked so out of place that entire series. He was scared of Looney. Like it was ridiculous. The amount of boards that Looney got, let alone offensive boards, was insane for a game. And you just got to wonder if mentally, the Kings got into their own head. They did have home court advantage, so it was obviously a bit of a tragic loss to that season. I mean, I think when the series first started, we talked about how ridiculous it was that the Kings make the playoff for the first time ever. Oh, well, not first time ever, first time in however many years it is. And then, they're rewarded with facing the Warriors straight up. So Kings will be back. They've got a great young core. I don't know. I think they had the opportunity to close that game out, and they're going to regret that for a long, long time.
So were they like the Grizzlies last year?
I think they've got a lot of optimism. Like probably, yeah, I think the comparison you're probably making here is this time last year when the Grizzlies, who had a strong season but then were eliminated, you kind of felt pretty optimistic about their going forward because of the young core, in the case of them, Jar and Triple J and Bane. And with the Kings, yeah, they've got like a really exciting young group that, and I think, yes, they lost, but having played a game seven, like if they'd lost in four or five, how much value to get out of that? But actually playing in a game seven and having Steph Curry put up like what he did, Looney being as hungry as he was and really showed them the way with, you know, particularly the offensive boards, but just completely dominating and wanting it more, you know, they should learn a huge amount from that as young guys and should be able to take that forward. So I think, yeah, you've got to be optimistic as a Sacramento, you know, faithful and, you know, someone that supports them because, yeah, I think that's, you know, it's looking very good in the near future.
I think one of the key things for me, though, obviously it's always interesting looking back, was all those reports of that speech Steph Curry gave the team basically was put up, shut up, don't even get on the bus if you're not fully into this. I've got us. I just need you to, like, follow me. Like, we've got this as a team. Because there was some shit going on. Like, you could tell that team kind of felt weird. Jordan Poole was all over the place throughout that series. Wiggins was kind of hit and miss. And a couple of other bench players, you know, were obviously a bit annoyed that they weren't getting minutes. So I think, you know, just kind of uniting that team and going into that hostile Game 7 environment in Sacramento, you know, Steph Curry is just kind of cementing his legend more and more and more.
Well, he's one of the best stars I think a team could ever want. I mean, obviously he's fantastic on the court and has been for a while, but he's such a good star to have, I think, off the court as well to lead a franchise. So great series win for them. We talked about the Kings being in the same position as the Grizzlies. They better hope their sophomore season doesn't go quite like the Grizzlies ended. The hands of the Lakers, a 40-point loss in Game 6. The Lakers win 4-2. We'll talk about the Lakers shortly when we preview that series with the Warriors. But the Grizzlies announcing today, Dylan Brooks, they won't be bringing him back. He's a free agent. They have no interest in re-signing Dylan Brooks. It just all kind of blew up for the Grizzlies. And I'm really intrigued to see where they go to from here.
Yeah, it's kind of... I know we talked about this matchup, you know, when it was set. And I think Dave, yourself and I both picked the Lakers to go through here. Sai, you mean, I think Grizzlies here.
Yeah,
Hey, I know I'm going to get heat as soon as we get to one of our last topics. So I'm just kind of spreading the heat around before we get there. But I will say, so like, not entirely surprising from the point that Anthony Davis has been great in that series. The young guys, Reeves, and a couple of others coming off the bench have been absolutely, you know, or when they've been in those rotations, have been absolutely outstanding. And, you know, again, we just talked about Steph Curry and his leadership. We're looking at LeBron James and his leadership with this team. The Grizzlies have just felt like an absolute train wreck for the second half of the season. All the off-court stuff. Dylan Brooks trying to lean into this villain role and just failing miserably at it. It just felt kind of the writing was on the wall with this one. I think the Grizzlies will be back and they'll obviously be really good. Steven Adams has been out for months. He's not going to have surgery. They're just going to look at just rehabbing it. So they'll be back. And, you know, Dave mentioned earlier, I think just before we jumped on and started recording, the key to them is just building around their young core. They've got a great young core. Steven Adams is going to be a good leader and a good locker room guy there. So, you know, hopefully they can do that deep run next year without the drama.
Yeah, I think that they've kind of, I would say that there are a lot of people, especially anyone with Kiwi sort of connection, would be a lot of people's, if not favorite team, second favorite team. But they've kind of taken this, like, from being, you know, really popular to doing like to use a wrestling term, like a heel turn this year. It's been real crazy to sort of see their off-field drama. But yeah, I think going forward, could they bring in like a vet or two to help? I know that Adams is obviously a key vet and helps with the locker room and all that, but would that be something that, you know, they're kind of missing? Because end of the day, like, they've kind of run it back a couple of years, and like, how do they get to that next level? To the, you know, I'm just thinking of someone like a PJ Tucker that's gone to the 76ers, one of those sort of, just to help them, that hopefully kind of keeps the guys on the straight and narrow, and it not necessarily doing huge sort of, you know, scoring points and whatever, but just kind of the intangibles. That's kind of maybe what something that could help them, being young and a little bit immature through the season.
Well, how about this? How about the flip side to this argument? Let's just go full fucking chaos mode and get Kyrie Irving there and see what happens. I like what you're saying, though, Dave. I think, you know, like, that is a very good point. If they got, like, a Kevin Love or somebody there, like, it could steady the ship quite a lot. Steven Adams reportedly tried to do it a while ago. So, yeah, we'll see.
They have to listen to the guy, though, and I don't know. I don't know if these guys will. There's some question marks about that culture down there, and I mean, as great as Ja Morant is, you know, he's one of the question marks as well. And I don't know, it's good to get a veteran in, but it's like, well, who's, you know, are they going to listen to this veteran? And is he going to, you know, be able to get them in check? Let's move on to the East. The rest of the losers. Start with the Cavaliers, beaten by the Knicks, 4-1. I didn't see it coming there. I'm big on the Knicks, but like, didn't think it'd be 4-1.
No, neither did I. This was kind of a weird series for me, because this was the one that I was like, surely this is a 7-game series here, and at the beginning of this series, I was like, Kevin Love's made a mistake by jumping ship from the Cavs and going to the Heat. So I think it's a bit of a hard pill to swallow for that Cavs team, especially because Mitchell has been so excellent this season. Garland's been pretty great as well. But when Mobley just doesn't show up in the playoffs, and, you know, suddenly you've got Julius Randle coming back from injury for the Knicks and there, between Mobley and Jared Allen, like, they just couldn't stop a lot of points in the paint. And Brunson has just been excellent. So I think what the Cavs need to do in the offseason, just kind of regroup. You know, they're not going to make any big drastic moves, I don't think. But it'll be interesting following Mobley and if he can take that next step in his development.
The problem for the Cavs was their big move was last offseason to take that next step and to go and get Donovan Mitchell. And now they're kind of still where they were, which is on the fringes of contention. And they're a very good team in a fourth and fifth seed, but they're not, they don't look close to being an actual contender.
I kind of see a little bit of similarities with the Grizzlies, where I'd expect them to probably be a 50-win team year in, year out. But would I be really threatened if you know, the team that I support was facing them in the first round? Probably not. I think Caris LeVert is a free agent, so it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I don't know. I mean, I think that they're all in. Obviously, they've got Mitchell. They've got to just try and, you know, tweak some of the pieces around that and you know, run it back. I'm sure they'll be an over 500 win team again next season and be in the playoff mix. But yeah, just if you're trying to make that next step and take on the Celtics and Bucks and the other contenders.
Just bring LeVert back to Brooklyn. Mm. Bring Jared Allen back to Brooklyn. Hey, look, apparently Royce O'Neal and DFS are on the table to be traded. So apparently the Grizzlies are looking at them. But hey,
that's because we've got
to the Cavs.
We've got about 38. We've got about 38 Dorian Finney-Smiths and Royce O'Neals on our team. So
wingers.
I like both of those players, but certainly you'd hope they'd be moving. One or two of them. We're not going to talk the Nets again, though. Let's talk Hawks. Hawks out 4-2 to Boston. Felt like that was, you know, whatever the series scoreline was, it was always going to be Boston winning it. And they did. I don't know if the Hawks run it back. I'm interested to see where the Hawks go from here. Made a big trade last summer to get DeJounte Murray in from San Antonio. That was their big move. But again, I mean, similar sort of chat, I guess, to the Cavs, but they're just kind of worse than that. Like, they're sort of in that seventh, eighth seed. And I don't know if there's, you know, I don't know if Trae Young and DeJounte Murray is, you know, as this roster is built, is going to get them much higher.
I do want to give the Hawks some credit, though, because I'm pretty sure we all thought they were just going to be gone. They weren't even going to be in the play-in. They came in as the seventh seed, and then they put two games up against a strong Boston team. And mind you, Boston looks really lost on defense this postseason. I don't know what's going on, but that's a topic for another day. So I don't know. I'm the Hawks. I'm feeling pretty okay. I feel like, you know, you snuck maybe two more games than everyone thought you would. You've got a new coach in Quinn Snyder there as well. You've got DeJounte Murray and Bogdanovich, who have absolutely been great. Trae Young seems to me like he's potentially the missing, the odd one out here. Just kind of the interactions with Snyder on the side of the court seem a little odd. We've kind of spoken about this a bit before. So if I'm the Hawks, I'm really, really considering moving on from Trae Young, seeing what I can get for him, and then trying to, you know, hopefully play into the future of the Hawks by trading to a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who are in need of a point guard and who may overpay. I don't want him at Brooklyn, but that's kind of the teams, you know, that'll be looking.
You're right.
For
them. Yeah.
The only thing that kind of maybe just again to similar to the Grizzlies is like where Grizzlies is Jar and it's a city. You do kind of feel like Trae Young. He is Atlanta, so I completely agree that they will probably be looking at it and seeing what they can get. But whether the fan base would love it, that would remain to be seen. What actually impressed me more about the Hawks, you kind of touched that they actually finished eighth and went to Miami and won that first game away. And now look at how Miami is sort of going. They've gone one up away, you know, against the Knicks in the second round. So that actually, when you look at that, the Hawks kind of stumbled their way into it and actually, did exceed expectation in that front. I don't know if the DeJounte Murray, Trae Young, we'll call it a, trial really worked. Something definitely does need to happen in this offseason. But they have proven in the last few years that they are a dangerous team in the playoffs, and they did make the East, you know, the Eastern Finals not that long ago. Similarly with an okay regular season and then just sort of really turning it on in these best of seven series.
I do think Trae Young is also just capable of just blowing any team off the court on one day. So they've always kind of got that win, I guess, in their pocket. You just don't really know when it's going to come out. All right. We're not going to dissect the Clippers and Timberwolves and Bucks. We've done a fair bit of that on the last episode. And if you want our dissection of the Brooklyn Nets, you can listen to just about every episode we've ever recorded. So let's look ahead to the series that are coming up and in some cases already underway. Start with the one that I'm surprised Denver are up 2-0 and looking really comfortable against the Phoenix Suns and looking like they're going to breeze through that series.
How is this surprising?
Denver's a great team, but I really thought the Suns team is also quite a good team and didn't think this would look quite so easy for the Denver Nuggets.
I'll sort of speak in here first. Denver,
go on.
Denver had a record away in the regular season of 19 wins, 22 losses. They've looked far and away the better side in the first two games, but they were both at home. And I'm sort of scarred from the Nets-Bucks semifinals from a few years ago where the home teams just absolutely dominated those first four, maybe five games of that series. So I'd like to see these next two games, games three and four, which are going to be in Phoenix. And, yeah, Phoenix could just as easily, especially with Durant and Booker, the strength there, they could just turn up and, you know, all of a sudden we're at 2-2 and then it's game on. It's a best of three at that point. So I'm holding my reservations. I think they haven't looked great. Chris Paul hasn't looked good, but I'm not writing off the Suns just yet, personally.
Fuck reservations. Fuck having sensible takes here, Dave. Go deep down into gut reactions. 100%. Nuggets are winning this series. Like I'm super confident in it. The fact that they weren't the favorites leading into this was always kind of weird for me. Totally agree that Booker and Durant are two fantastic teammates, and they've just been stellar together. DeAndre Ayton has looked really out of place these first two games. I don't see that changing a whole bunch. And then also, like, the problems that Phoenix had towards the end of the regular season are still there, where they just don't have depth on their bench to, you know, support these kind of deep runs, especially when they're going into, you know, Denver, which is at altitude, and you've got these guys, like, it's going to take it out of you a bit more. Chris Paul exited the game last night. Looks like he, you know, did something to his groin. So there's a chance that he doesn't play in the next few series, well, in the next few games as well. So that'll be something to watch. But they just seem like the Nuggets seem more like a well-rounded team. And they remind me of the Bucks and the Celtics of the last kind of 2 years. So that's why I think they're going through and they'll be winning the West.
What about the Celtics, eh? Down 1-0 to Philadelphia.
Yeah. That was a big panic. So the Celtics,
no Joel Embiid.
No Joel Embiid. James Harden just continues to piss me off by having incredible games where I don't want him to. But the Celtics look really out of place on defense. I don't know what it is. Robert Williams just seems to not be like he was last year, kind of giving up a lot of points in the paint. They really, if the Celtics want to win this, they need to take that Nets blueprint, which is forcing everyone out to the edges and covering James Harden and just making all those points go through Maxey and others, because Tatum and others can actually score points where the Nets couldn't.
Well, I think as well, Tatum and Brown were awful down the stretch yesterday in game one. They, I think, contributed 2 points in the whole fourth quarter together or something silly like that. So, you know, that's clearly another area. I don't think it's panic stations for them just yet, but they can address a few things. Joel Embiid will be interesting to see when he comes back and, you know, how fit he is. But clearly, I mean, I would be surprised if Harden has another game like that. He's notoriously never been that good in the playoffs as a compared to his sort of regular season form. So, yeah, I mean, that was the game of his playoff career, I'd say.
What I would say is, a shock. Is kudos to James Harden if this is his defining playoff. As much as I don't like the guy, and like, you know, good on him if after all this shit he's gonna deliver at this point and at this age. But I mean, it's a long way to go. It was a 4-point win. I mean, still though, like, no Embiid, the MVP, consensus NBA MVP, no Embiid, and they win in Boston, and notoriously hard place to go. It's a bad loss for Boston there. Game two is on Wednesday night in Boston. If Philly go up 2-0 there, it's a long way back for Boston. Heat and Knicks. Heat are up 1-0. And my goodness, I'm really more and more liking this Miami Heat team.
Jimmy Butler again.
Jimmy Butler, baby.
Just, I don't, you got to respect the guy for staying on the court for while he's completely rolled his ankle at the that game. I don't know if it's smart, though, because if he's out for tonight's game, there's going to be a big missing piece. And I just don't know if the Heat will be able to compete with the Knicks without Butler. Obviously, Randall's out, but I just feel like with RJ Barrett and things like that, the Knicks should take that win. The other kind of... But been failing dramatically lately, so I'm going to roast myself on this. The other thing that I said early into this kind of playoff run of the Heat was that Kevin Love wasn't going to continually be there for the Heat and be a guy that they can rely on. And he has been. He's been really consistent, and he's been slotted into that starting lineup really well, and he's been a key player on that Heat roster. So time will tell. This one, I feel like, is going to go down the stretch. It's going to go to 6 or 7 games for sure. But, man, those Knicks, if they can't get out of their head, you know, and get a win tonight at NSG, it's going to be a huge uphill battle for them.
Are you paying for Game 7 tickets?
Would I pay for Game 7 tickets?
Yeah.
Probably
tempting.
Not. It is tempting.
Good atmosphere
For those two teams. Yeah.
Sorry, Dave,
sure.
You were saying.
I think, I mean, you can't go down 2-0 having both your games at MSG. Like, I think tonight feels pretty must win for the Knicks. Even if it does get to that sort of game 6, game 7, if Jimmy Butler's back to full fitness by then, yeah, it's going to be kind of like a Butler v Brunson. And, you know, Butler's got miles in the tank and sort of proven record in those clutch games, where I'd probably be leaning. You know, I picked the Knicks or the Heat? now predictions. I can't remember. But I do agree with Fates that it could go either way. That's going to be a fascinating series to watch unfold.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all want the Knicks to win. I think at heart because we're all in New York. I don't know whether, you know, like the MSG, like in playoffs is just something you've got to experience. I've never been in playoffs, but it just looks absolutely nuts. But, you know, these are kind of two teams that I don't mind going to the Eastern Conference Finals. They feel the lesser of the Eastern Conference evils of Philadelphia and Boston.
Some of us saw this coming. I spoke last week or the week before that the first round of the playoffs was the best week. Best round because there were so many good games on all the time. This round is the best round of the playoffs because you get two games, great matchups every single night.
I'm gonna say something though. The East is kind of boring to me. I feel like the West has been way more entertaining. Also, one of the other weird oddities is that if you look at all the seeds that are in there, they go 1 to 8. They don't duplicate numbers. There's only a number one seed. There's only a number two seed, etc. So I believe that's the first time that's ever happened. So in this round.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it is a shame that I agree. The West are more fascinating, the games, but they generally start at, you know, 10 p.m. Eastern for us. So that's a little bit frustrating. Hopefully there's a few Warriors-Lakers games that are kick off a little earlier, certainly midweek.
I'm going to work and Devin Booker's storming off the court after going 3-0 down. It sucks. Final series, save the best to last. That's the way you do it. Lakers-Warriors starts tonight, 10 p.m. Again, late one, in Golden State, in San Francisco. I am like, I'd really love to watch more of this series than I'm going to be able to do. But like, who are you rooting for, I guess, on this one? Because I'm like, the Warriors have won so much, but I'm kind of on board with them being good, like one last time.
Yeah, in my head it's a tough one because it kind of feels like it's LeBron's legacy to a certain level, like versus Steph Curry's legacy to a certain level. Like, I just feel I don't mind who goes through on this. I think like on paper, if you're looking at it, the Warriors definitely have more depth and should get through against this Lakers team, especially if Looney plays like he did. I don't mind who goes through though. It's just going to be a fun as hell series to watch, and I'm just super pumped for it.
Yeah, I want to see and these games be determined by just like sort of like how Steph Curry had that 50-point game in Game 7. You know, I want to see Curry scores 45 and wins, you know, carries the team, and then the next game LeBron gets 35, 10 and 10, and or you know Davis, like just you want to see these elite guys top of the game. Well, in fact, in LeBron and Steph's case, kind of towards the tail end of their career, but still shine, you know, how good they are. And so that's probably the big thing for me. Hopefully it goes, you know, to that Game 7 as well. I'm fairly neutral, though, otherwise.
Yeah, I'm not too fussed either. I think I'm in Team LeBron. I think I'm in LeBron's camp. Wanting the Lakers slightly more. Probably gives them a little bit of incentive to stay in LA as well. And not that there's like a you know likelihood that he was going to leave, but certainly if they're going well, then I think he's more likely to stay. Lots of good games coming up. By next week, we may have some series done. I mean, certainly this Denver series, so is a possibility. So look forward to discussing next week. We're talking NFL. The draft is coming gone. We're basically set in stone now. Until preseason starts, there's not much more to do. We've addressed Lamar Jackson, we've addressed Aaron Rodgers, we've addressed the draft. Odell Beckham's got a new team. It's all done. So now we can sit here and say what our bold predictions are for the new season on the second day of May.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Like, it is like, it's weird that, like, it feels like we only had the Super Bowl like a few weeks ago, yet we've now done the drafts. People's fifth year's options are being either, you know, extended or they're being declined or exercised and declined, I should say. And then in like a super weird turn of events, seeing Aaron Rodgers throw, I mean, he was redshirted, but throw the ball in an OTA yesterday or the day before. It's super weird to see considering it's May, but Onwards we march. So the schedule, I believe, is released next Thursday, so May the 11th. So that's Friday the 12th for people in the Southern Hemisphere. So we'll find out when some of these key matchups actually are. But kind of looking ahead, I'm going to go and shock everyone here by saying, like, the very obvious choices for me in my head from the NFC, I'm going to stick with the more boring division at the beginning. To me, it clearly comes down to the 49ers and the Eagles, just backed off by their defense and the fact that they've kept their cores together. You know, I would expect both of those teams to do a deep run. So
I wanted bold predictions, James.
Well, the AFC, I think, is where my bold predictions come through. NFC seems kind of boring because, you know, you only have a few key, you know, exceptional quarterbacks on that side. When you start looking at the AFC, where you've got Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, like all these other guys, Aaron Rodgers now, there's a whole bunch of really good elite quarterbacks that are going to miss out on the playoffs this year. So I think one team that I'm definitely watching and probably going to put some money behind is the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were a team that I really liked last year. They're young. Trevor Lawrence has looked incredible. They've got obviously Etienne at running back, Evan Ingram tight end. Plus they've got the addition of Calvin Ridley, who has spent a year away from the NFL for betting on NFL games because he's an idiot. So I think for the AFC, I'm definitely looking at them. To make a super deep run and probably have a go at a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I think I mean, there are, when I was just thinking about teams, I think in both sides, NFC and AFC, there are kind of the three boring options for each. So AFC quickly, Chiefs, Bengals, Bills, NFC, Eagles, 49ers, and maybe a little bit below that, the Cowboys. They're probably your, if you're ranking the top three in each division.
Hang on. Are you going to put the Cowboys?
I said top three. There has to be. I'm saying they're third best in the NFC going into the season.
Fuck me. That's depressing.
But, yeah, which probably says a lot about the NFC. But I think if you're going a little bit more left field, I'd probably go the Seahawks in the NFC. You know, they had a very good draft. It's going to be, can Geno take them to the deep? You know, like, I think they're a team that, you know, with Pete Carroll kind of under the helm and, you know, Geno having a good season last year, I think, they're the team. Like, I would have liked to have said the Lions, but I feel like their day one draft, which we talked about last week, has just, like, thrown me off them. And
Williams being suspended for
Exactly. Yeah, and their, you know, stud first round wide receiver from last year, Williams, not being there. So, I think they've taken a little step back from how I thought about them, you know, a month ago. And that would have probably been a lot of our sort of dark horse as we sort of last year. And then probably on the AFC side, Jags is a good
hang
call.
Hang on. What about the Vikings, though? Is nobody buying into the Vikings this year? I mean, they obviously had that very debatable run last year where there were a lot of one-score wins. But obviously with a beefed-up defense and kind of returning players, like, are you rating them at all, or you kind of don't think that they're in the equation?
I think that, well, I mean, they're in the NFC North. I think they're going to be, you know, up there and very much in the playoff mix, but I'm not as concerned. Or I'm not thinking that they're going to be, you know, Super Bowl contenders. On the AFC, I'm thinking, I mean, the Jets as a local team that, you know, is going to be fascinating to watch and see how Rodgers kind of the chemistry with the young team that he's joining. And then the other one would be the Ravens. Now with all the shit sort of dealt with, and you've got your guy, you've got some weapons for him that he's never really had. Let's see how this Ravens team goes. So I think that's an exciting, I guess, not hugely left field, but sort of probably a tier below the kind of main contenders.
I'm also not that bullish on the 49ers. I'm wondering if a quarterback that's had five starts in his career and was not a high draft pick, and it's not highly touted, with a bit more film on him and a bit more time to study him, is not going to quite have the same success that he had in that five-game sample size. So I do wonder a little bit about the 49ers taking a step back. But this is all minor league stuff. Let's get into some big league stuff. If you're playing fantasy football, for instance, who do you think's like a sleeper pick? Do you think who's going to like – who are we going to like – it's, you know, teams being good is fine, but who's, you know, who's the player that we're going to be talking about in December like everyone knows him?
God, I hate how you guys do this to me every year, because I know people in our fantasy football draft in our leagues definitely listen to this podcast. This is kind of timely as well, because I actually messaged someone from the league and was like, can you send me through all our draft order from last year? So I've already made a big list after that draft. I think kind of a couple of the sleeper picks for me are going to be probably a bunch of the tight ends that came through. So specifically, Michael Mayer, tight end for the Raiders, nicknamed Baby Gronk. I think he's going to be absolutely fantastic at a Raiders team where they're going to rely on the short pass quite a lot. Devontae Adams is going to be, you know, pulling in double coverage most of the games. And then you've got Josh Jacobs in the backfield. So I think those short passes are going to be big, and I reckon he's going to eat a lot of ball. The other one that's kind of probably a big one for me, I think, is Zay Flowers. I really like...
That was my one.
Yeah, I really like Zay Flowers.
I love him too.
I think for the picks, obviously, the Seahawks got probably what I thought was the best wide receiver in the draft. The fact that Zay Flowers went two or three picks after him, or a couple of picks after him, I just think the Ravens got an absolute steal there. I think as well, like I said last week, learning under OBJ and probably being the immediate second or third option to receiving the ball is good. The only downside is going to be the Ravens are traditionally a run first team.
So. Yeah, they are. But you think about the coverage Mark Andrews gets, and you know, OBJ is going to, like, I feel like there's going to be opportunities for Zay Flowers, and I don't know, like the fact that the Ravens have been pretty aggressive at wide receiver this offseason suggests maybe a willingness to, get the arm out a little bit more. So I think Zay Flowers is a great chance to have a really good rookie year.
Do you know I covered a tight end, I covered a wide receiver. Let me do a sneaky running back, Dave, before you jump in here. David Montgomery for the Detroit Lions is my other pick here. Obviously, the Detroit Lions kind of made everyone scratch their head when they took Higgs at 12th at running back. They then traded Swift to the Eagles. So it feels to me like there's going to be a big gap and a big bunch of question marks on that team. David Montgomery is going to drop in drafts, and he would absolutely be the player that I'm looking out for. If he's there kind of seventh, eighth round, I'm definitely taking him for sure.
The other one on the running backs would be the Seahawks running back that they drafted, because the way Kenneth Walker runs, there's an injury waiting to happen. And there will be more than one number one running back that goes out. And, you know, if you can find the best backups and stash them early.
It'll be interesting to see where Tony Pollard ends up on the order, just because of obviously no Zeke, so his volume and, should be going up hugely. And so that may play into him being selected quite early. But, you know, he's never had to be the top guy. So I think JSN for the Seahawks, for the similar reason to Zay Flowers, where he's not going to be the most covered guy because you've got Metcalf in the lineup, but he could make some pretty big players. But yeah, I haven't really done any sort of fantasy thought.
For me, that scares the shit out of me, just because of Metcalf and just how much they throw the ball and kind of ruin the run. But
that's going to be a fun offense to follow, though.
Dynasty drafts.
It was also, you know, that question I'm posing is, you know, fantasy is an easy way to look at individual players, but certainly, even broadly speaking, I'm interested in the players that are really going to make a mark that maybe we don't talk about so much in terms of just from a football perspective. And I wonder how that Seattle pass game is going to sort of blend together with those three stars.
Yeah, and someone like Garrett Wilson, who put up pretty good numbers as a rookie with an awful quarterback, you know, you should be pretty optimistic about the top wide receivers in a team like the Jets, who have now got one of the best quarterbacks in history to throw up to them. You know, huge difference.
It's a good point. I'm interested to see how Christian Watson goes with Jordan Love throwing to him as well. Yeah, I'm interested to see the changes in quarterbacks and how that affects wide receivers. Let's talk NHL quickly before we wrap things up. So the weights, I think the Rangers lost, Bruins lost.
Lots of upsets in their first round of the NHL. Probably one of the better first rounds of professional sports in a long, long time.
Yeah, playoff Boston, hockey is good.
Playoff hockey is excellent. Boston Bruins set a regular season record for the most points scored ever in NHL history. And then they absolutely got embarrassed in a seven-game series against the Florida Panthers. Not that the Florida Panthers are bad, but the expectation for Boston sports teams are always through the roof, and this one was even higher. So Bruins absolutely blew out. My two picks right at the beginning of the NHL playoffs to make it through both got knocked out as well. So Colorado Avalanche absolutely got taken apart by Grubauer, who is the ex-goal tender for the Avs. He's now at Seattle Kraken. Cale Makar, the star defensive player for the Colorado Avalanche, was injured as well. Well, got suspended for a game. So they were out. And then the Rangers losing to the Devils in a very hectic game seven. So it's kind of pretty disappointing to see both those two teams out. But the kind of remaining stretch of this playoffs is where it gets really exciting again, because one of the best stories outside of these, apart from seeing Boston get fucked up, is the Toronto Maple Leafs. For the first time in a long time, they have won a playoff series. We put some footage up on our social media page of just the supporter zone in Toronto just gone absolutely nuts. So the Maple Leafs take on the Florida Panthers, which would be a huge game. Dave, I think you were saying something earlier before about tickets.
Yeah, so like the Panthers, Florida Panthers, I saw it on the news this morning, or I was reading about it, where to buy tickets to this Panthers Maple Leafs game in Florida today, or for the first few games, you have to be a resident of the United States. So I think the Toronto Maple Leafs, because they haven't made the playoffs that much, I think they are notorious for, they do travel very well. And so I think Florida are worried that, you know, it's going to feel like a home game to the Maple Leafs. So they've kind of put that little curveball, but I think you'll still find people are going to find ways with secondhand market. So it'll be interesting to see how big of, you know, a following the Maple Leafs have there. But I think they are the easy team to get behind, right? Like they are the sort of the Cinderella story that I'll be certainly going for them, and probably the Oilers as well, with being Connor McDavid's the one of the few guys I know well. So I'll be keen for them to do a deep run as well.
Yeah, I think with Colorado now out, it's definitely, I'm hoping for a Maple Leafs final. And then probably, like, I think my dream scenario would be the Kraken versus Golden Knights in the next round, and then the Kraken going through. Grubauer was fantastic at the Avs, so seeing him go through. Definitely don't want a Dallas team going, even though the Stars are very exciting to watch. And the dream result for North America and viewership and advertisers would definitely be a Oilers versus a Maple Leafs final, just to split Canada in half there with support.
Would love to see that. But you still got it, the Rangers are not there. But
absolutely. Rangers and, you know, like a couple of the other teams, the Rangers will bounce back, though. It's just disappointing with what they did in the offseason. And then the Avs, they've just struggled with injuries all season, so it just wasn't the year.
Mm-hmm. All right, Dave's Irish Exited. We're going to bounce as well. Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to us on Spotify, iTunes, like us on Instagram, not on Facebook, sometimes on Twitter. Sometimes on Twitter. And we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Bye.